It's Monday, January 2nd, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, we talk about food, and we have a special guest.
Let's do this.
So, Happy New Year.
Happy 2006.
Yep, we're back after our short, slight hiatus.
And we're tired as hell.
Yeah, we had a lot of people over for a crazy party all weekend, and they're all still here, and we're upstairs locked in a bedroom doing the show.
Well, some of them are still here.
Yeah. So we started off the new year with a brand new, well, you know the exploit that we talked about a couple shows ago, the WMF in Windows. It's an image file that if you display it or access it at all, it can infect your computer with anything, like full access.
No matter what program you're using, if you a picture can be displayed by that program, and it displays a picture in this format, and that picture has the bad stuff in it, then your computer will be screwed.
And, well, somebody made a worm that's exploiting this.
Well, there you go.
It's
and
an
Windows
IAM
exploit
worm.
Found, Windows exploit used.
It's an IAM worm, and it spreads through Microsoft Messenger right now. And I don't really need to get into all the details, but it's not so simple as it shows you the image. It shows you a link to a JPEG image. But the .jpg is actually an HTML, which links to the WMF, which then gives you the virus, which is a collect credit card numbers and send them to someone randomly thing.
Great.
Yeah.
Can't they just see where the credit cards are being sent to and catch the guy?
Usually these things are sent to, like, anonymous, unmoderated IRC channels that then disappear on, like, shadow IP addresses.
Oh, that's not very good.
Yeah. But basically, this vulnerability is not patched, not easily patchable. I mean, a lot of people have said that there's a patch for it, and that's kind of true. Some dude, and, like, Gibson, that security guy, looked at it and said, yeah, this is okay, this isn't a bad patch.
Mm-hmm.
It mitigates the vulnerability. It makes it less easy to be exploited, but there's really no way to do it because the vulnerability is in a certain DLL file that all of Windows uses. And
great.
If you unlink that DLL, which most people don't even know how to do, Windows will likely not work.
Well, you'd have to modify the DLL, but of course, it's part of Windows. It's closed source. No one knows what's in it. Modifying it would mean disassembling it, and it's pretty tricky.
Yeah, I mean, there are decompilers, and they exist, but for anyone who doesn't code and doesn't know about this sort of thing, decompilers, which take compiled code and like try to recreate the source code for it, don't really work.
They don't work well at all.
They give you just this mess of useless garbage. Like, if you run a decompiler and then you immediately try to recompile that code, it usually just won't even work.
Most of the time, yeah. I mean, a lot of CS students will try to cheat with decompilers. They'll be like, aha, the teacher has given us a working solution to the problem, but we don't have any source code. And the goal is to write source code that does the same thing the example program does. They're like, I'm so smart, I will decompile it and just copy the source code. Well, there's a reason the teachers don't care about giving you the sample solution. And trust me, they're CS teachers, they know about decompilers.
Yeah.
They really don't work so well and they won't help you.
I mean, basically, if you're a computer science student and you cheat to get a good grade, if you cheat well enough to where you didn't get caught by one of these CS professors, you deserve to pass because you're smarter than they are.
Yeah, I mean, if you manage to get a decompiler working, even if it to the point where it's the best decompiling job that can possibly be done, let's say you set that up somehow, right? And then you're still going to have to do a lot to that decompiled code to make it something you can submit. And if you can do that, then you could probably have done the assignment in the first place.
Like, you know the situation of a criminal who puts more effort into stealing money than it would take to just get a freaking 9-to-5 job to get the same money? It's that kind of situation.
Yep, exactly that situation.
But we don't want to scaremonger or, you know, just really work this up. And we're really not going to talk about this exploit anymore because it's in the news. You can see it. We've talked about it twice already. But watch out. Like, seriously, don't go to websites you don't trust and don't click on links if you don't know where they go or who sent them to you.
And, you know,
this is a bad vulnerability and it will screw you.
I just don't get it. Like, this is the third or fourth time that we've said this is the last straw for Windows. Here is a security hole that is easily exploited, difficult to protect from, and it pretty much screws you over. Don't use Windows anymore. It's your only hope. Only hope.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
You know what? People are still using Windows, and the camel's back has not yet been broken, despite being smashed on with many sledgehammers.
Well, part of, I mean, there seem to be two factors here. One is that people don't seem to realize how much this spyware and adware that they get infected with affects the performance of their computers. I mean, a clean Windows XP system with all the service packs.
With old XP, without all the crazy patches preventing, you know, security holes.
But even with all the patches, it's not that bad. It's pretty stable, and it's generally pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But most people have so much spyware on the machines, and they don't realize it, and that slows the computer down to the point that they think they need to buy a new one.
Yep.
And two, a lot of infective agents now, they don't tell you that your computer's infected. They don't do anything to you. All they do is they spew garbage out of the network port into other people's computers, or they hold WAERS files for other people to get later, or they steal your credit card number, mm-hmm. which you wouldn't realize right away.
And people complain about a lot of things like ads and spam and all that sort of stuff going on, but most of that is because your computer isn't secure. If your computer is secure and set up properly, ads and spam really don't happen.
Yeah,
you know, most spam comes from people whose computers who are all infected. That's where the spam comes from. It's you. You're sending the spam, but you don't know it.
There was a guy at my work, who doesn't read Slashdot, and he said he didn't read it because of the ads. And I said, what? Those are, the most unobtrusive ads ever, and if you really wanted, you could block them. And he was like, unobtrusive? They're pop-ups and pop-unders, and they pop all over the place. And at this point, I was like, what? Slashdot doesn't have pop-ups.
It never will, and never has.
It never did, it never will. Even if Slashdot turned evil, they wouldn't use pop-ups because they're not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at his computer, and he's got just, pop-up spyware, and apparently it was just randomly, it happened to pop up a lot of the ads when Slashdot was open, and he assumed that Slashdot was the cause.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I couldn't even fix it because AdAware is not free to corporations, and this was his work computer, and I just told him
you can use Microsoft anti-spyware, but none of the spyware things are complete enough. There's no way to 100% protect yourself, and it's just not worth the effort of protecting.
So I guess if you need a New Year's resolution and you're a computer guy at all, or a computer girl,
if you use your computer more than once a day,
try to learn Linux. Get an Ubuntu CD or any sort of Linux Live CD and just play with it. Because within a few years, you might need to move off of Windows if things get bad enough.
Yeah, you might just, if you depend on your computer for your business, or especially for your business, but for your entertainment or for anything, then, Windows just might not cut it in a few years if Vista, is all DRM'd like they say it's going to be and such.
Now, we're not trying to be Linux zealots use Linux, open source.
You can get an Apple if you got mad monies.
Yeah, get an Apple. Apples are fantastic. We're thinking about buying one to do this show.
Yeah.
But this is just, it's good advice from us to you. You really... Knowing Linux over the course of the next couple decades is going to be a very useful skill in the world. And even if you don't think it will be, you'd be surprised.
Yeah, even if you're not even a computer guy or anything, if you're just, some normal person, this is a nerdy thing that is going to come and affect you. A lot of people are like, they're in some profession and they say, oh, the things in my profession affect other people and they don't even know it. And then you walk around seeing other people getting screwed by that thing you know. Like if you're a florist and you see people buying bad flowers and you're like, man, you should really know this. You wouldn't buy bad flowers. It's affecting you in a bad way. A florist doesn't know about computers, but, if other people bought better flowers, that would make the florist happy and it would make the people a lot more happier because, they just don't know. This is a thing that you should know that can help you out. So in Japan, they have these hotels I think are really cool. They're called the capsule hotels. And basically, it's like this tube. Like a tube just big enough for a person to fit in.
They're actually a little bigger than that. You can kind of sit up if you're not
too
tall.
Yeah, you can kind of sit up. It's not really just that small. It's not like a coffin.
No.
It's a little bigger than that. But it's not big at all. I mean, they stack these things up vertically and horizontally and everything. And it's pretty much a cheap hotel. So if you're one person on a business trip and you want to save money, you pay a very small fee and you get a bed and like a little TV next to your head for the night. And it's very practical and efficient.
Yep, and usually in the building or next door, there's a bunch of public showers and things, so you can shave and shower and do all that stuff before you go to sleep.
Yep, not like these American hotels where you have like all this space and you have to pay huge amounts of money and go through a whole ordeal and you get furniture you don't use and all this kind of stuff, like, the kind of space you would need if you were staying for weeks and weeks and weeks, which some people do need. But most people stay in hotels for maybe like a weekend and you don't really need all that stuff, there's no point to it. So someone is finally taking this idea out of Japan and into London. And they're calling it, the company, Yotel, Yotel.
Yep, Slashdot called them coffin hotels.
Yeah, it's not quite coffin-sized. It's actually bigger than the Japanese hotels. They're 10 meters by 10 meters squared in floor space. And the ceiling is actually as high as, a normal ceiling is.
They're about the size of, you ever lived in on the East Coast, on like the Jersey Shore, there used to be all these, like maybe 10 years ago, there used to be all these little like tiny beach houses like on the beach. Mm-hmm. And in London, they have these things a lot. Or not in London, but in Britain. These tiny little beach houses, and they're just big enough for like one person to crash on the floor or on a little cot and change into a swimsuit.
Yep. Well, these hotels are 10 meters squared. They come with a sofa that turns into a bed. You know, it's a couch bed. And it doesn't really have a real television, you know, but what it does come with is a sofa. I already said that. A desk that you pull down, so it's like you pull it out of the wall and you can put something on it. Closet space, very small amount of closet space. Some mood lighting, which is always cool, you know. A shower, very useful. Wireless internet, the most useful. An iPod connection, so you can plug your iPod into the hotel room and the sound comes out of the speakers in the hotel room. And there's a flat screen TV, which saves a lot of space. And, you know, these things are going to put them in airports and all kinds of other places where hotels are used very often.
But they're also places like that. Those hotels are used very often, but they're used for like one night usually.
Yep.
Like if you stay in an airport hotel, that's because your flight got canceled and you're stuck there.
Or it could be because you came on a trip and, you know, you have to make a transfer the next day to that's international.
Yeah. Now, so, why do you want to pay $300 for a huge hotel room that you're going to be in for like a few hours while you're asleep?
Yeah, you're only going to use like the bed, the shower, and maybe the TV. You don't. I mean, seriously, has anyone here ever actually used the nightstand or anything other than the telephone and the clock and
once,
room service?
Once I unpacked my clothes into the dresser of a hotel.
Wow!
But I stayed in the same hotel room for a week.
Oh, a week? I can understand a week.
Yeah.
But anyway, they say it's going to cost about $70 a night, which is real cheap.
Yeah. I mean, we go to Baltimore every year for that Otakon, and the cheapest hotel rooms are over $100 a night, and mm-hmm. usually we spend about $300 a night.
And they say you can also book it for four-hour periods, which is real useful if you have, like, a transfer, or you want to just take a little nap before your flight, or you got to the airport way early and breeze through security. You know, you can go take a nap there.
Yep. Or you're on the road, you want to take a shower.
Yep. Now, it's not quite, you know, the perfect thing that I've been looking for, which is even smaller and in New York City, but this could, if it succeeds in Britain, come over, which would make me very happy.
Yes.
I mean, there's nothing I need more in New York City than a place where I can just either crash for the night for like $100 or spend $20, take a shower, you know, and shave and change my clothes.
Yeah, like
that would be so freaking useful.
Like, say you woke up late for work. It'd be so much better to go on the same normal train you always go on and then get to the city and then, like, shave and shower and everything there and then go into the building.
Yep. I mean, and think about this. Let's say I go to work for the day, right? I'm wearing my work clothes. But after work, I want to go hang out with some people. So I spend $20. I could take a shower to get my work off of me. You know, I can change into fun clothes and get off the work clothes. I can put all my stuff in a locker that I rent out, you know, and I'm good to go. Maybe I'll take a little nap if I'm going to like a concert that's later at night or maybe a hockey game or something. You know, who knows?
Yeah, see, I'd love something like that.
But as it stands, if I wanted to go to a concert or a hockey game after work, I have to carry a backpack to said hockey game or concert or event or meeting or whatever, you know, and I got to change my work clothes in the work bathroom and I'll be all stinky from work. You know, and it's just a pain in the ass.
Yep. So if any venture capitalists are out there listening to the show, either give us some money and we'll do it, or give someone who wants to do this money so we can use it.
Yeah. That would make my life great. And it's good to see that the idea is finally spreading.
And actually, I'm glad that it's starting somewhere like London, because this is kind of a stereotype, but I get this impression that a lot of foreigners, as opposed to Americans, would be more open to at least trying something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So if it succeeds in Britain, because people might try it and go, oh, this is cool. And then it comes over here. Then they can say, yeah, people in London use this and it's great. Instead of, all right, America, here's this weird thing that is kind of weird to you guys. What do you think?
Yep. All right, so you know 3D Realms. They were that game developer, publisher back in the DOS days that you saw in every freaking game.
Yep. They're still around or no?
They're technically still around making that, you know, Duke Nukem Forever game. Yeah, so on their website, which still exists and I guess is still updated, because they did make that Max Payne game sort of recently.
That game was kind of good.
I never played it, but anyway, they have a download page. And why would just a download page and some game developer's website be so exciting? Well, this download page has everything.
What do you mean everything? Everything this company ever did?
Well, anything even remotely related to this company. They've got MP3s from games. They've got videos of like game commercials. They've got every shareware demo and patch for every one of their games.
Hot shit.
They've got DOSBox and assorted DOS tools to make things like networking work. They even got a video of an interview with some of their developers. Now, if you don't think that's so cool, let me remind you of some of the great games made by this company. All of the Duke Nukem games, ever. Raptor Call of the Shadows.
That was my favorite shmup ever.
Terminal Velocity, which is the 3D shmup. That was awesome. Every Commander Keen. Crystal Caves.
I never played Crystal Caves.
Crystal Caves is all right.
What was it?
I don't really remember. I just remember I liked it.
Then why'd you even bring it up?
Because I remember that those words, Crystal Caves, and associated them with good game.
Great.
Rise of the Triad, which was like the awesome first-person shooter where you had like the hand of God and like a dog's head for a hand and other weird stuff. And you could go up and down. That was the big deal on that one. Wolfenstein 3D.
Ah, yes, Wolfenstein, which
yeah.
we just
all
talked
the,
about.
All the early id software was under 3D Realms somehow. I don't remember the exact legal whatevers.
Huh, because I really didn't know that.
But there are also many, many, many others here, and I would say of any download site and any page ever, this is the most useful one.
Luckily, we don't have enough listeners yet to Wang or Slashdot or Farkit.
No. They were Wanged recently, and they're still good.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Damn.
They're fine.
So my thing, I really like sushi and that sort of Japanese food. And we're doing our show today about food just for no reason. We couldn't come up with anything better.
We're such geniuses.
Yeah. And basically, this is an instructional video on Japanese etiquette when it comes to eating sushi. Now, if you watch it, it's going to look dead serious. And it'll act like it's actually telling you how to eat sushi. And I will give anyone money if they actually follow these instructions in a sushi-ya. This... just watch the video. That's all I can really say about this.
There seem to be a lot of funny things lately where they try to make something serious, but actually it's silly.
Well, like that German forklift video?
Yeah, it's a really good humor thing lately, that trend of funniness.
So anyway, things of the day aside, it is food day, and we're going to talk about food and the food we like. And we like lots of food.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone who doesn't like eating. Oh, wait. Anorexic people.
So we've got a special guest today, and he is an expert on food. His name is Art Boy, aka Adam.
Okay, so my name is Art Boy, and I'm an expert on food.
Arting food,
right?
I mean, you draw bowls of fruit,
I draw bowls of fruit. There we go. Ay ay ay. But yeah, so we had some good food today, though.
Yeah, we went to a hibachi we've got that's up the street, and we've mentioned it a couple times.
We only go there, you know, every week.
Yeah, we eat there so often. We walk in, and the waitresses are like, oh, it's them, hibachi, right? We're like, no, sushi today. And they're like, you bring friends.
Yep. Because usually what happens is when we go without friends, we sit at the sushi area, and when we go with a bunch of people, it's like hibachi. So they kind of figured it out. They look at how many people we've got, and they're like, and then we're like, no.
For those uneducated, and if you're not educated, you should be about this, but hibachi is basically like a big table that's also a oven, and everybody sits around the table, and a chef is there, and they do all kinds of cool things with the food, like they spin eggs on their little spatulas, and they throw food around, and they cook it, and they serve it to you right there, and it's really hot and good. So it's like half show and half restaurant.
And they make lots of fire.
Yeah,
there's
lots
of fire.
Of fire.
Everyone
fire
likes fire.
Always
I mean,
good to have fire
the only
food.
Sad thing about it is we do it so often that, like, I'm not impressed by it anymore at all.
Yeah, I'd have to go around, like, finding different hibachi guys who have different things they do.
Like, some guy, like, cuts an egg open, like, burns it on fire, lights his hands on fire, does, like, a thing with it, and you're like, yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen that thing. You did it last time I was here. Impress me, man. Like, light someone here on fire. Let's see you do that, smart guy.
Yeah, they really, you know, but it's weird because the guy like knows us. So like we went in with a new person and he's like, oh, you're the new person. I will do special attention to you because you will actually
attack.
Be impressed.
Special food attack.
Yeah.
But so the real reason that these two guys brought me in here was partially because I'm their friend and partially because they said it. Oh, great. They laughed at the friend part. It's like, oh, yeah, we're friends. Right. Yeah, sure. No, they wanted me to tell a story about eating in Japan because I had spent some time in Japan one summer, and it was lots of fun. And if you ever have a chance to study abroad, do it, because it's pretty fun. But there's this place called a yakiniku, which literally means cooked meat. And the way it's set up is you pay by the hour. So, like, let's say you're going to go eat with a bunch of friends for, like, an hour and a half. It's, like, $15. and you can eat all you want for an hour and a half. And there's a little conveyor belt that goes around all the tables, and it's like comes out in an island in the middle of the restaurant.
Whoa, I didn't think places like that actually existed.
Yeah, just not here. Because, I mean, here, you know, you have, like, filthy children who, like, touch the food as it goes around.
So the place is like a square or a circle, and everyone sits around, and all the food is in the middle?
Yeah, think of, like, a W shape. And the food goes around this W shape, like around the side, and then around the middle, and then around the side, and then goes back into the kitchen where we don't know what happens.
I got it.
So if any of you venture capitalists from the previous segment are listening, give us money for that too.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, we'll make one of those with the hotel attached.
And have a LAN party inside. But so when the food comes out, it's usually like frozen. Like, so like when the meat starts coming around, it's like these frozen like slices.
So you don't want to sit at the beginning.
What's that?
So you don't want to sit at the beginning part.
Well, I mean, even if the food goes around, it's supposed to be frozen so it keeps cold until you cook it. Because what you do is you take it off and you put it in this little burner grill that's in the middle. And you cook it there. Oh. And they have like this suction that sucks the smoke off of there so you're not like filling the entire place with smoke. Now, something to understand is that in Japan, beef is really expensive. Like, you don't find $20 steaks. You find like a $30 or $40 steak and it's like hamburger meat. It's like, it's ninja food. I can tell you the ninja food story too if you want. Mm-hmm. But so this food's going around, and we're Americans going to this Japanese place, and we're like, oh, yeah, it's just beef. We cook it. We eat it. So we sit down, and we didn't know also at the time that they don't clear your plates as you're eating because all the food comes around in these little, like, 5-inch in radius dishes. So they're going around, and we're taking food, and we're eating, and these plates start piling up at the table, and they're piling up, and the waiters are sort of looking at us funny because, you know, they've never seen, like, an American person, like, ever, I guess. And you know, the plates are piling up, and we see them talking to each other. And one of the guys there spoke a lot of Japanese because he was, like, advanced. And he was like, they're asking each other whether or not they should clear our plates. And I was like, oh, my gosh, why are they doing that? We found out later that they don't clear the plates until after you leave. Like, they're the help, and you don't see them. So eventually they're chuckling at us and laughing, and they're taking away the plates. And we were there for, like, the full hour and a half. But when you put four Americans with small amounts of beef in front of a grill and just have them eat, there's never like a filling because you're digesting as you're eating. So we ate something like 132 between four guys.
Wow.
132 plates of food.
I picture the manager of this place being like,
oh, we just lost so much money. Oh, no. So, you know, and we're eating like desserts and everything. We walk out of there, and as soon as we leave, these guys are like laughing their asses off and pointing at us as we leave. And we're like, wow, that was cool. We got to go back next time.
No, so you know what they were laughing at was the guys in the back on the other end of the conveyor belt.
Yeah, seriously.
Like,
that's something else we noticed is that the meat started out like soft. And as we were there, the meat started getting like more and more frozen. So we figured the guys in the back are going, oh my God, what's happening to all the meat? Quick, shave some more meat off, put it on the thing. So, you know, and you know, we went back again like 3 days later with like 8 people. The same thing happened, except we ate like 400 plates of food.
Wow. I'm surprised these people just have like, all right, no more gaijin.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. They're like, sorry, you guys can't stay this long anymore because we're losing tons of money on you for eating our really expensive beef. Please go away.
I mean, I've heard of business males failing against new technology, but business males failing against new nationalities or something else.
Yes, exactly. They didn't count on the American. It was, you know, you think barbecue, you eat at a barbecue. You know, you keep on grazing, you go around. So this was like, instead of the grazing, the food just kept coming to us, and we were like, hey, more beef, throw it on the Barbie.
I can feel like the moment you guys sit down, the beef just stops coming back around.
It's like all vegetables. It's like, damn.
Yeah.
I figured they found us out. The ninja food was kind of amusing, too. Like, if you go to Japan, ever, or any other country that doesn't have, like, native food, like a lot of people think, like, American Italian restaurants are, like, Italian food.
Not at all.
They're wrong. You know, the same thing happens in Japan. If you go to Japan, like, the only American food you're going to get, or even anything close, is going to be, like, McDonald's. And that's not really American food. That's, like, just...
It's not food.
It's not food.
Well, it's not food to begin with, but it's, like, pretend American food.
It's meat-flavored food-type product. And we went to this Italian restaurant because we were like, oh, we want some Italian food. So the Japanese were like, oh, okay, we'll go to the Italian restaurant. What we didn't count on was the ninja food. See, ninja food is food that is Japanese food trying to be other food. So, like, I ordered, I think, like, spaghetti and something like that, spaghetti and meatballs. And it was, like, obviously chopped up bits of hamburger with, like, soba noodles and really, really thin, like, tomato sauce. So it was like, I was like, this isn't Italian food. Somebody ordered, like, lasagna, and it was, like big pieces of, like, it was, like, drunken noodles with, like, tomato sauce and some meat in there. And we were like, what is this? And they, of course, they jacked up the price too. Like, you know, like here you can get ramen for like at a nice restaurant, it'll cost you like $5. In Japan, it'll be like $1.50, like the equivalent. There, like Italian food was like $30 for like a pile of like fake Italian food that was Japanese food.
Wow, do people actually eat that and like it though, or?
They probably don't know better. I mean good food is good food.
They have like freaking, you know, seafood and like shrimp and seaweed pizza there, so I guess it's got to be selling or something. I mean,
it must
be. Horrible things they do to pizza there. Good God.
Mm. Though even here, I mean, our friend Pete is, he really knows the Italian food well, and he's always like, yeah, all the Italian food here is crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my sister said that my sister got back from Italy and she was like, I'm never eating any Italian food ever again. No, not gonna happen.
So I guess it's all spoiled. That's really how it is like, you know, all the food you eat in any particular country is, you know, or 90% of it anyway, is food of that country. Mm-hmm. And if they say it's food of a different country, it's just pretending to be that other country.
Yeah, that's why I like the Japanese snacks are awesome wherever you go, because they're always Japanese.
Yeah, I just bought a big thing of those wasabi peas.
Oh,
those are like the best thing in the world.
Oh, yes. Wasabi.
I mean, I assume people who listen to Geek Nights know what wasabi is, but it's this wonderful green substance.
It's like a mash.
And it tastes like mint, and I recommend you eat a bowl of it.
At once. Yeah. Real men can eat a whole bowl without even flinching.
Yeah, actually, it tastes like burning.
Like, you know those firecrackers those mentally retarded guys ate?
Oh, God, I saw that on Fark.
What, really?
That wasn't a joke.
Yeah, there was something like some story on Fark about, like, was it Beijing or something like that during the New Year or something? It was some Asian country. And it was like during the New Year's, like, two guys died because they ate firecrackers.
What? It's what, like, did the firecrackers say on them? Like, food? Or?
You know what? If there's a fuse coming out of your food, don't eat it.
If there's a fuse coming out, there's something else up.
Did they light him first and then eat him? Or
I have no idea. I didn't read the whole story. I was just, you know, you read Fark half the time, you don't even need to read the story.
Exploding with flavor.
DRTF, I think it is.
In fact, if you read the story, a lot of times it ruins it because the headline's funny and then you read the story and it's either like, wow, that was a horrible thing that happened to whoever that was. Mm. Emphasis on was.
Or that was boring, or that wasn't at all what the article was. Or.
Yeah, I hate it when headlines are misleading. That just pisses me off all the time.
Except the fake headlines on Fark. The ones that are there just to trick news anchors and morning radio news guys who like to just read Fark for their living.
That was something disappointing, I noticed also. Like on my local wacky DJ radio show, like back in Maryland where I used to live, used to have Elliot in the morning, and they would always get all these funny news stories, and I was like, aha, funny news stories. And then I was like, wait a minute,
he's reading Fark.
It's all just off of Fark.
Yeah, every now and then Fark will put like a fake story, and then in the comments it'll be like, all right, the story's fake, or this, we just made this up, or we linked to a parody site, we know it's fake. And then it's just kind of a game to see how many news people reported as truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's always good.
And then it'll be like, you know, W whatnot reported this is true, K something 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 said this was cool.
www.kdumbass.com or whatever.
This morning radio guy reads Fark. So does this one. They all
do.
What?
We read Fark, and we're not on the radio, but unless we get some pirate radio going at some point.
Yeah, I don't think pirate radio is necessary when you have podcasts.
That calls for an MP3. That we need the pirate radio MP3 now.
Mm. So anyway, food.
Yeah.
What other interesting food stories have we run across recently?
Well, I don't know. We've had a lot of food trouble lately trying to, you know, have a party.
Yeah, we've learned that, like we said previously, yes, our friends can eat all the food we have.
Yeah, I mean, we never really, we've had parties before, but we never really provided food because
we were poor.
And it wasn't so many people for an extended period of time.
Like, people would come and go, and they'd walk, like, they'd bring their own food, or we'd, like, go to someone else's apartment, raid their fridge, and then leave.
Yeah, but now we're expecting to have dinner from anywhere between, like, 10 and 30 people.
Yeah, because half of our friends are cool, and we're like, yeah, we're coming to your party, and half of our friends just disappeared off the internet for the 2 weeks before.
Yeah, I mean, keep your communications up, especially if you want free food.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, because we had free food. We got actual catering, and it came, and then we ate it.
But anyway, we had no idea how much to get, so we pretty much just did a crapshoot saying, well, we'll learn this time and get it right the next time.
I don't know, I think you guys got enough.
Yeah, no one said, I'm hungry after we ate.
There's still plenty left downstairs.
We just called the pizza guys, and we said, bring two trays of this and a tray of garlic knots. And
oh, those garlic knots.
Yeah, we should have gotten twice as many of those.
Yeah, I don't know why we got so... I didn't realize... There were a lot of garlic knots when I opened it up, and I said, that'll be enough.
I had, like, one, and there was, like, a whole plate. So someone was, like, scarfing...
I had three or four. There were, like, 50 in there.
I think somebody just jacked, like, a whole bunch of them at once.
It must have been. But I didn't eat the chicken. I only ate the noodles, which is very, very good.
Yeah, the chicken marsala was okay, but a lot of people like did like mushrooms and wouldn't eat it.
Yeah.
I dug the mushrooms. I definitely dug the ziti more than I dug the marsala.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll learn next time. We won't get the chicken marsala again, especially because it made a big mess.
Yeah, I have serious concerns about any food that is so much slathered in sauce that it is its own soup.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I want to eat the chicken, but I got to find it. Like, I got to dig around in there first under the brown to find where the chicken is.
The one issue that we had, and we didn't realize we had it until right before we ordered the food, was that one of our friends, and only one, is a vegetarian. So we planned out all the food, and then we looked, and we're like, wait a minute. Every single piece of food we were providing has meat in it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're like, all right, crap. What are we going to do? And most places who provide food, like catering food, don't seem to have vegetarian food that doesn't suck.
Yeah, at least the problem is that we can't really ask
and
a vegetarian.
And for all of you who were at the party, I made that salad in a pair of boxers, like, earlier in the day.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never had salad that has been mixed inside of boxers before. I'm glad I didn't eat it.
Well, the thing is that, you know, we, as meat-eating people, look at vegetarian food and go, that's not good. But then the vegetarian people might think differently, but we can't really order for them so well.
Oh, speaking of vegetarian food, I told this story earlier today, but I should probably tell it again. An old roommate of mine was dating a girl who was a vegetarian. And this was in college, so I had three roommates at the time. And one of them was dating a girl who was a vegetarian, and one of them was very considerate and decided that she was going to make dinner for everyone when this girl came over, and she was going to make a vegan lasagna. And I'm not
sure.
How
would that work?
Well, I'm not sure if anybody knows.
I mean, an important ingredient in lasagna is meat.
Yeah. So, you know, an important ingredient in everything that is vegan and not including meat is usually soy or tofu or some other soy-based product. So what?
Unless you're a level 9 vegan.
A level 9 vegan. That's a militant vegan.
No, like you're only allowed to eat things that don't cast a shadow.
So anyhow, she decided that tofu would make a good replacement for the ricotta cheese in lasagna, and that a
what's
good
wrong with cheese?
I don't know. Well, cheese
comes
is from a cow. And
wait, it's from a
vegans,
cow, so
yeah,
you can't
vegans,
do that.
Oh, yeah, vegans are like, oh no, you're stealing from. It's from
wow. Where does he get vitamin D from?
Vegetarian is I don't eat animals. Vegan is I don't eat animals or things that come from animals.
Well, I thought it was just they didn't eat like eggs and things.
Yeah, eggs come from animals. Milk comes from animals.
But, I mean, I know vegetarians who do eat eggs. You know, but
well,
I thought vegan was just not egg. I didn't think it was not milk either.
Vegan is a step more militant and a step more restrictive.
Yeah, I got sworn at by a vegan once, and I was like, screw you, heavy, I'm higher up in the food chain. I'll eat you.
Got a job.
But so she makes this thing, and one of the properties of tofu, and this is sort of like little known, is that it will absorb the flavor and odor of anything that it is cooked with. And Yeah, so
that's what I like about tofu is that it doesn't really taste like much except for the flavor you put into it.
Yeah, so
if you just want to, you have a sauce that you really like and you just want to eat it
straight up,
just pour it right on there. You
yeah,
know?
You could like make spaghetti with meat sauce.
Yeah,
and instead of meat, just throw in some like, you know, maybe meat flavoring of some sort, mm-hmm. and then throw in some tofu. And hey, yep. You got like fake meatballs.
Yep, you can. I love it when
meat
you
cubes.
If you just want to eat teriyaki for dinner, you just, you know, tofu, a little teriyaki.
Exactly. So anyhow, she decides to cook the this ricotta. Not ricotta, tofu with broccoli mix. And I'm not sure if anybody here has ever smelled like steaming broccoli, but go ahead and do it sometime. And it smells nothing like broccoli taste. It smells, I don't even know what it smells like.
It smells like the things that aren't in the broccoli when you eat it. Because
yeah,
the broccoli
like,
tastes good, and that does not smell good.
There must be some chemical in the broccoli that breaks down when you heat it and it evaporates, comes out in the air.
Yes, I agree. I think it pretty much smells like ass. Like ass and old socks. Like, that have been up an ass.
Smells like sweat and dead haws.
Something like that.
So, yeah, so the tofu, she makes this whole dish, right? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to be like the anime hero. I'm going to go and, you know, I think it's going to taste bad, but I'm going to eat it, and I'll swallow it down, and I'll be whole, and she'll think I'm a nice guy. And I wasn't trying to, like, mack on her or anything. I was just trying to be a nice guy, right?
You weren't trying to mack on her, eh?
God, no. We won't go into that. That's for another show. But so she makes this stuff and she serves it, and you know she serves me first, and then she serves, you know, my other roommate and his girlfriend who's the vegan, and she serves herself, and I go and take a bite out of it, and I cannot explain how bad this tasted. I mean, the tofu had absorbed the smell and converted it into taste. So you had semi-tasteless broccoli with ass-flavored tofu and like some red sauce between like noodles and stuff. So I take a bite, and I'm like, I'll just choke it down. I tried to swallow it, and I was just like, like right back on the plate. And she looked at me like horrified. She was like, "What'd you do that for?" And I was like, "I'm sorry, but just try it, please, and I won't feel so bad." And I went and I was like, "I'm sorry, I have to do this." And I was just scraping it off into the garbage. She was like, "It can't possibly be that bad." I said, "Just try it." And she tries it. This is the girl who cooked it, and she goes, "Oh," right back on the plate. And so naturally, you know, the other two people are like, "No, they got to be screwing with us. It can't possibly be that bad." So naturally, "Oh." So pizza was ordered that night.
That's just like when you see someone and they eat something and they go make a bad face, like, "Oh God!" And then they're like, "Want some?"
That's a guy thing. It's definitely a guy thing. It's like, "This tastes awful. It tastes like ass. Try some."
I'm always worried about like spitting out food because there's only two times I spit out food, or like if you know there's something in my mouth and I'm coughing and I'm gonna Heimlich or something, or if like I can't chew it. Like that happens a lot where there's food that's just tough and I can't chew it enough to the point where I can swallow it, even if it tastes good.
Yeah, like half the stir fry we try to make.
Yeah, and then I'm just trying to find a way to spit it out like nicely.
You know what the best technique is? Because I can actually get a good
napkin
technique.
On mouth is
napkin
what I
on
use.
Mouth. You dab the mouth and you go, and then you just kind of put the napkin aside, kind of crumpled, so you can't see the giant wad of food.
I prefer to do the 5-year-old thing. We just sort of go like, "Burgle," and you just lay it right there on the plate.
You know, if you're at someone else's house, just spit under the table. They won't notice. Left the party.
Only if they have animals, pets, or something.
No, just pile. You ever like had that Calvin gum? And Hobbes.
Have you ever had meat gum?
Wait, meat gum?
This is not meat-flavored gum. This is a term I came up with when I was two. My mom had made a veal.
Or veal's good.
Veal or pork chops or something. Mm. And had made it poorly. And I distinctly remember walking around the house chewing and not being able to like break it down in my mouth. And I said, "Mom, you made meat gum." And I'm not sure if that had any effect on her, but she never made it after that. So, "Mom, I'm sorry if I killed your cooking in the veal area."
We have a serious problem with our stir fry and basically meat gums. We now have a word for it.
I don't know. My stir fry doesn't end up as meat gum, but it's just, not much it doesn't better. Taste anything like stir fry I get at real places of awesome.
Like we've watched professional chefs do stir fry, and we try to do like we do make the exact same motions, and not the same thing comes out.
I just don't know what it is.
It's you've probably done the British thing and just cooked the flavor right out of the food.
Yeah, but if I don't cook it that much, then it's like uncooked chicken.
Yeah.
It pretty much goes from raw to black in 1 second.
Wow.
I think it's just a large part of it is because we have an electric oven. And every stir fry guy I've ever seen do something well had some sort of fire.
Yeah. Actually, the Culinary Institute people who do all the cooking in my cafeteria at work, they use, it's an electric, but it's that cool ceramic electric where it's like ceramic pad and then the whole thing heats up at once.
Oh, mm-hmm. Where it's like down in the oven?
No, it's up. It's just like a pad that's ceramic, and it gets hot. Oh. And I'm not sure what the mechanism is for it getting hot.
Hmm. Probably electricity?
Yeah, something like that. No, a little like hamsters on fire.
That's what
ceramic
needs.
Is very good because fire you can hamsters. Heat it up a lot without it breaking or melting or anything.
Yeah, hence, you know, the ceramic tiles on the space shuttle.
A lot better than metal.
Metal spaceships, that would work well.
Except dolomite.
Oh, God. Does that count as inside?
I don't know. Futurama is one reference to dolomite.
I don't know. I said I was trying to explain the Hebrew hammer to somebody, and I said it's
oh
juice.
God, the Hebrew hammer.
I was trying to explain it as juiceploitation to a coworker who was black, and I was like, it's just like a blaxploitation, only it's juiceploitation. And he was like, what's blaxploitation? I was like, are you kidding me?
I'm going to admit something so everyone can laugh. I have no clue what dolomite is.
Oh, okay. Well, I could see not knowing what dolomite is. You know what blaxploitation is, though, right?
Of course I know what blaxploitation is.
You've seen Shaft?
I'm a huge fan of blaxploitation.
Well, then you should see Dolomite.
He's one.
Oh, it's a movie called Dolomite that is a blaxploitation film?
I don't know if the movie's called Dolomite, but there's a character named Dolomite.
Yeah. I think there is actually a movie called Dolomite in which the character is Dolomite.
Yeah. And in Futurama, they make a reference to Dolomite at some point.
Yeah, geeks know what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're not a geek, you shouldn't be listening anyhow.
There might be like three comments in the forums like, yeah, it's season blah, episode blah in the last 4 minutes.
I'm at dolomite.com and it is quite awesome.
It's another thing of the day. I feel bad. I feel like I should have a thing of the day, but I had nothing. Rim took mine that I sent to him.
Yeah, that sushi thing was given to me by Adam, and it was given to him by his girlfriend.
My fiance.
You know what? It's mine now, bitches. It's
fiance. Got to get that right. She's looking at you angry.
Yeah, I see her there. You know what? She can't talk because we're on the air live. Now she's trying to gesture to me, and I can't tell what she's trying to tell me to say. Now she's acting like she's eating something.
She's saying either eat me or bite me, one of the two.
I don't know, but now she's giving up.
So in a reverse non sequitur, when you're searching for dolomite.
Reverse non sequitur.
Don't type in D-O-L-O-M-I-T-E. That's the name of a mineral discovered by some French mineralogist. It's sedimentary. Search for dolomite, like D-O-L-E.
Like Bob Dole. Is
what
Mike.
About ammonite? Ammonite.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm definitely checking this movie out, though.
What, Dolomite? Yeah, check out Hebrew Hammer, dude. That's a cool one.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe
I always mean to, but I
think
just haven't.
The Hebrew Hammer. That's a holiday treat for the whole family.
Well, we've still got Black Samurai, which is supposed to be a blaxploitation about samurai.
And we still have yet to watch it. Like
we could watch
like
it.
Like, we've just been saving it and saving it and saving it. And
we could watch it after we do the show.
Oh, my God.
You have something next time to talk about, I guess.
Or we could just save it forever and never actually watch it, because it's probably
it
a lot
running
cooler
joke.
Now than it will be after we see it.
You see, I thought you were explaining the show earlier when you were talking about like the guy getting off the plane and being attacked by ninjas all the time.
No, that's a different movie.
That's a different movie.
We all have this
on
box
the same set.
Set
of DVDs.
The set is just ninja movies. Movies involving ninjas. And I've discovered that while I like ninjas, almost every movie involving them is terrible.
Yep.
Like Ninja Scroll.
Or Three Ninjas.
Well, the thing is
three.
That after American Bruce Ninja. Lee stopped making movies, a bunch of people in Hong Kong and other places made a whole crap ton of crap movies with people like Bruce Lee. But Bruce Lee spelled differently. Bruce like, Lowe.
And they're all these guys. They look like Bruce Lee, but they're not as good.
Yeah, or they're close to Bruce Lee, but some of them are good and some of them aren't. But they were just like Bruce Lee clones. And they just try to imitate him and make those kind of movies.
Yeah, and then Brandon Lee met that horrible fate, and he was pretty cool, too, which is a damn shame, because he could have been, like, the next, like, American martial arts guy.
Yep. Of course, there's that new guy, the, like, it's the Filipino kickboxer
Ong
or something,
Bak.
Something. Ong Bak.
Well, that's the name of the movie. Is that his name, actually?
I have no idea.
I haven't seen any of it. I don't know what's going on.
I watched the trailer for that movie, and I said, that looks awesome, but I haven't seen the movie yet.
Yeah, because it looked like normal fighting, like Jackie Chan-style fighting, and then they're like, yeah, no stuntmen, it's just like Jackie Chan. Only there was also explosions, and it looked serious instead of funny.
So you have the other end of the spectrum, which is like the Stephen Chow.
Oh God!
Yeah, we were pointed out today that like, oh yeah, we watched what was it, Kung Fu Hustle, and that was awesome, and Challenge Soccer was awesome, and God of Cookery was strange but awesome.
You know what? That's a nice reverse non sequitur because I like that term.
See,
God of Cookery.
I must have leveled up in radio or something.
Yeah, we're not. Well, God of Cookery. Hey, we're talking about food again.
Yeah. So
that's
if you
that.
Need to see a movie and you're bored. And I think it's on Netflix. This movie is called God of Cookery.
Stephen
and
Chow.
It is quite literally about the God of Cooking.
Like, you think it's just like, oh, the guy is so good, he's a god. No, there's actually a God of Cooking in the show that appears. And it follows along the lines of Stephen Chow's movies and his ridiculousness.
I mean, if you like Iron Chef, because a lot of geeks are fans of Iron Chef for some inexplicable reason, this movie is up your alley. You have no idea.
Yeah. We had some good times. The Stephen Chow movies, I think, are... This thing, going backwards, is something that what he pointed out, is that there are tons and tons and tons and tons of Stephen Chow movies.
And 90% of them suck, and I don't know why. I mean, because I've seen three of his movies, and they were all awesome. So I thought, all right, I'm going to look up and see what other movies I can get. And he has, like, 40 movies in Netflix. So I added them all to the queue, and then I watched, like, one... And it was like the worst movie I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It just went on and on and on. And there was this thing with a mole and it wasn't cool.
Yeah, it could have been funnier if they cut out a lot of the dumb scenes.
Maybe it was just like his
maybe
early...
Maybe even better editing.
Maybe it was like his early stuff or something. Like maybe his later stuff that we know and love is good. And his early stuff like sucked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know Kung Fu Hustle is kind of new. And
very new.
Challenge Soccer's new.
Yeah, God of Cookery is kind of new too.
Even Beijing, I think, was it From Beijing with Love, was another one that I haven't watched yet. I don't know if it's good or not.
I have to see that one.
I think that one's like in the late 90s. Even.
If it's any good.
Yeah, I'll have to see.
To do the third reverse non sequitur, he actually hires like the same actors for a lot of his movies. Like if you just watch all the recent ones, you'll see like the same actors over and over again. Mm-hmm. And people like The Beast is actually one of those old Bruce Lee clone guys that he thought was good, so he hired him and turned him into not a Bruce Lee clone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a lot of guys like that. Like that woman, the landlady and her husband.
Yeah,
in
she's in a lot of stuff.
Shaolin Soccer. She was in a lot of other stuff like that was old and crappy. So he brings back people who actually like have some martial arts movie talent and puts them in his somewhat good or even better movies, you know, so that they can... fix their reputation for making a bunch of crap movies.
Now, if you need any kind of impetus to watch God of Cookery, there is a scene where they introduce the 7 or the 9 or some number. I'll just go with 9 because I don't remember. The 9 brass monks. And basically, the main character trained with these monks for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And they show the training, and basically every time he screws up, the monks would punish him, and by punishing him, they would all appear like on the screen, and they would do like these crazy, you know, kung fu movies. I'm about to do awesome kung fu setup, and then they would just run over him, hit him with a chair. Mm-hmm. it's that kind of humor.
The movie can be summed up in 3 words: pissing beef balls.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for the opening music.
Thanks for listening. Please remember to point your favorite podcatcher at feeds.feedburner.com/geeknights to get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. Also, please visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com for the latest updates and forum discussions. And whether you love or hate our podcast, we won't know unless you send your feedback to us at geeknights@gmail.com.